Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution is made possible by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And if you'd like to know more about an investing program that features hand-picked mutual funds selected for their flexibility, strength, and diversity, look at KPP's Select Growth and Income Program. Just click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com. And now, today's InvestTalk.
Hello, 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 and good afternoon. Welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, January 11th, 2016 edition of InvestTalk, and we are here to help you and everyone else listening, which are the average investor mainly, become better than average. And it's a continual learning process. And even for a professional, it's a continual learning process. So don't think that you're the only one that has to learn. You got to keep up with people like me who do this all day long. And it's really a state of mind, right? Gathering information, connecting the dots in our understanding of the financial markets and capital markets and how best to manage our own money lives. Saving, spending, investing, etc. And we're here to answer your questions and add whatever perspective we can based on the experience we've had over the many, many years. You know, I know Steve's been doing this for 30 plus years, and you know, I'm going on about 15 years. So it's been a long time, and you've heard the expression "earning while you're learning." And it can be applied to the money management endeavors as well. And you're earning or maybe losing while you're learning. It's possible to experience some painful learning experiences and painful lessons. It's best to invest as much time as you can learning before you begin putting your hard-earned money into the mix. I see this all the time. Is people hear a tip or they see something on the news or online or whatever, and they get this idea in their head that they can make money too. Can't be that hard. Just open a brokerage account, place a trade, boom, I'm invested. Sure, that process nowadays is far more simple than it was 25, 30 years ago, but how hard it is to actually make good decisions has probably become even more difficult in this globalized economy. Just look what happening right now in China and the big sell-off there and how it's affecting our markets. Understanding that complexity is very big, and it's not like it was 25 or 30 years ago. Problems in China wouldn't really leak into our economy. But in today's globalized environment, it can. So like I said, it's more and more complex each and every day. And so far, 2016 has certainly not been shy. It issued a very convincing message. And that message is, buckle your seatbelts. There's likely more volatility ahead. So what's your strategy? You can say, oh, I'm going to cash. Well, does that create tax consequences? Are there other ways to make money in a bear market? There are. Do you have the expertise to do that? Now, a recent survey of investors between the ages of 18 and 34, these are millennials mainly, show that 82% of all respondents, investors and non-investors, felt they lack financial knowledge and investing confidence. And that's very understandable. Most people did not go to school for it. They weren't trained for it. The terminology a lot of time goes over their head. And that's okay. No one should feel bad about that. It's just not the way our education system is set up. You know, that's why we're in business. Because, you know, people that went to college for marketing, they have marketing jobs. You know, people that have education to go into engineering, they have engineering jobs. Financial professionals have education for that. So that's why we're in business. So don't feel bad if you lack the knowledge, but you can gain it But it does take time. Don't think that you're going to do this overnight. Now, this survey shows that millennials are investing their money. But the bad news is they don't feel that they know what they are doing. So the lack of knowledge is making them vulnerable to many of the mistakes the average investor makes, usually emotionally driven mistakes. So they're adding risk to the mix. Also, they're establishing bad habits that could remain with them for the rest of their lives, such as buying high and selling low and constantly chasing returns. That's the number one bad habit people have, chasing returns. Now, the other factors in all of this is there are other factors involved in this because of their lack of knowledge. And they're going to convince themselves and others that investing is riskier than it really is. And that's really what most people that are afraid of the markets, afraid of investing, they just lack the knowledge. And they've been burned because, guess what? They lack the knowledge. They just invested poorly. If you do it right, you can do very well. The idea is that we learn from our mistakes. And sometimes, you know, that's wrong. A lot of times they get jaded. People get jaded from their mistakes. You know, they just make the mistakes and they either blame the circumstances or other people. And they convince themselves that doing it right is just too difficult, or the system's rigged, or they're just not cut out to do it, or that investing is just too risky. Well, it's risky if you don't know what you're doing. So the difference here clearly is knowledge, and that's why obviously you're tuning in. So we want to help you help steer you in the right direction. We do have a recommended books section on investtalk.com. You'll find a whole assortment of worthy books in several different categories that Steve and I picked out and recommend. Just look for the recommended books list there on investtalk.com. We don't make money on this, so we're not trying to push these books. We just want to get you in front of the right pieces of material to help you learn faster and more effectively. Now it's time to get the conversation going. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number, and I hope you feel that you're part of the discussion. So if you have anything on your mind, financial related, just pick up the phone, give us a call, and hopefully I can give you some good perspective and open your mind to some new knowledge, and so you can make better decisions. So let's first go to our first live caller. We're going to talk to BJ in Fremont. He wants to talk about the market.
Yeah, thanks, Justin, for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy your show and your comments on that. My question is regarding markets. At this point, every analyst, majority of them, in fact, are talking about the volatility in the market. Mm-hmm. Market is going to be very volatile, they say. My question is, why markets are so volatile? What is that information that is not available to investors or analysts that this market keeps going up and down?
Wait, you're just asking why are they being volatile?
Yeah.
Well, you know, markets are volatile from time to time. You know, this one has probably many factors that feed into it. Some will say it's the problems over in China that are kind of rearing their ugly head once again. And I do think China is going to continue to go lower. So that's playing into it. The weakening of the yuan is going to create more financial problems. It's actually what it's doing. It's exporting deflation across the globe. And it's because they're trying to create inflation in China. And that's really the problem here. We're in the midst of a currency war. And, you know, now China's joining the game, just like Japan was, you know, and we did for a while, and Europe's in the process of doing. So we're in the midst of a currency war. So when you have foreign currency movements that are dramatic, that can create a lot of problems, especially in an economy the size of China. So you have that, obviously, as an issue. The credit markets continue to weaken on the back of weak commodity prices. Part of that's driven by the weakness in China. So that's an issue. A lot of it's because of the strong dollar and the tightening of Fed policy. So that is certainly playing into it. So it's not just one factor, really. And then you go into the fact that the markets are overvalued. And there's a lot of very overvalued names in the marketplace. So there are multiple factors, and we saw this coming. This is very, I would say obvious, but fairly obvious to us. So it's never just one thing. It's a multitude of factors. Thanks, BJ. Now, we're not giving your retirement plan. Now, why not give your retirement plan a new start for the new year, a fresh start for the new year? Now, one of the services we provide to a limited number of our listeners is a free retirement review. And Steve's next date for these retirement reviews is January 13th in San Ramon. That is Wednesday, day after tomorrow. This is very limited. I think we have one, maybe two slots open. I want to say at 1 and 2 in the afternoon. I think that's those are the times that he has open. So to save your time on January 13th, this Wednesday, just go to investtalk.com, click on the schedule meeting button. Let's go to Matthew in Kansas. How you doing, Matthew?
Good. How are you, Justin?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
I kind of have a two-part question if you got time. The first one, I'm looking at Potash, POT, for a long-term investment play, kind of on commodities and agriculture because it's a fertilizer company.
Okay.
I'm looking about a five-year time frame, probably four.
Okay. I like potash from a long-term perspective. Does it have more downside potential in the near term? Absolutely. I mean, there's really not a whole lot that's telling me this has bottomed yet. I don't know where that bottom would be. My guess actually is probably in around the $10 level. It's at $15.44 today. So there's certainly some more potential downside. Could it turn tomorrow? Sure. But like I said, there's no indication that it will. There's no real big high volume reversal or anything like that. And that's what I wait for. I like that it's on your watch list. It is cheap. But it needs to have a high volume reversal day, meaning either it's down big early and then it just rallies strongly throughout the rest of the day and that's on huge volume, or it just needs to be a big up day on big volume. And that would be, okay, now that's a high volume reversal day. And it shows me that maybe the smart money is starting to get into it. And I'm just not seeing that yet. But I do like that it's on your watch list and the fundamentals are good from a long-term perspective. Obviously, their earnings are down 15% in 2015, going to be down 4% next year. But, I mean, it yields 10%, and, you know, that dividend looks – let me look at the dividend yield real quick. The payout ratio is a little elevated. It's about 82%, but that's, you know, it's not over 100%, so I'm not too worried. A modest amount of debt. So I like what you're looking at here.
Right. And then, would you have time for one more quick one?
Sure, go for it.
Instead of junk bonds, like you and Steve said, they have, you know, pretty high risk. One from my father, who's pretty close to retirement age, we're debating on PFN. It's a floating rate.
PFN. Okay. Let me do this. I actually have to go to a break. I'm sorry. I'll come back after the break and get to PFN for you, okay? Now you're listening to Invest Talk coming up in the next half hour. Why trading volume is so important. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Give me a call now. James from New York is next on Invest Talk. Let's get back to Matthew from Kansas. Are you still there, Matthew? Oh, Matthew is not there. Okay. Well, he was, I think he was asking about PFN, which is an ETF, a floating rate ETF, a PIMCO ETF. Floating rate funds are notoriously very, um, they're dangerous. They seem like they'd be safe. Oh, you know, if interest rates rise, the payout's going to be higher because it's a floating rate. They own floating rate instruments. But the problem is usually those floating rate instruments are low in credit quality. So make sure if, I think he was asking for his dad, if he's going to invest in that, make sure that you understand that type of risk that is involved. And that's why it's been not doing so well, because high or low quality credits are certainly selling off hard. Let's go to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Listen, I started to bring this subject up, but I have a tax question.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
I'll see what I can do. You know, tax questions are yeah. usually pretty individualized, but go for it.
It's a basic, maybe almost even common sense type of thing, but I'll explain it as quickly as I can. I purchased a house in the year of 2014, mm-hmm. and the final quarter of 2014, I was able to deduct interest for the final quarter of that year when I filed for my taxes.
Okay.
This year, 2015, I've had the house for the entire year, mm-hmm. where I should be able to deduct all of my interest and real estate taxes. That's sort of a question in there. But mm-hmm. also, in 2015, I was married for half of the year. I never changed my claim to married, so I claimed single for the entire year. Mm-hmm. My tax preparer said to me last year, when I deducted only the 3 months of the mortgage interest, and him knowing the situation that I would be getting married, that I would receive a lesser refund this year than I did last year. By that rationale, does that make sense, or does it make sense that I would get more back given what I just mentioned?
So you got married in the middle of last year?
I got married in June of last year, but neither my wife nor myself, who intend to file jointly, have changed our claims to married. We've claimed single zero.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like it makes sense. I mean, you're talking about a quarter versus a full year of taxes. Obviously, your interest per month for this year is going to be less than it was last year, but I mean, it'd be negligible difference because, you know, especially the beginning of a loan, you don't really pay much in principal. Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense. I'm not sure. You know, I kind of have to look at the numbers probably and kind of understand that. Plus, I am not a CPA, so I can't really say that, like, I know exactly the rules. You know, we work with different CPAs for our clients, so I can give you the number if you want to contact me on investtalk.com, and I can give you the number to another tax professional that we work with. I don't have any in New York that I deal with, but I'm sure the one out here could certainly answer those questions because those are pretty basic. So sorry I can't give you a definitive answer, but it doesn't sound right.
So from the jump, it sounds, by that rationale, I would get more back this year. Is that right?
Well, a lot of it depends on your income this, you know, 2015 versus your income in 2014. Did you pay any points on your mortgage?
No, none at all.
Okay. So that might change it, but no, that if you didn't pay any points, that shouldn't be that much of a difference. Was your income materially different in 14 versus 15?
Not incredibly, no.
Okay.
A little bit, but not incredibly.
Yeah, there might be some changes in the New York state tax laws. I'm not sure because you're out in New York. Yeah, like I said, I would send me a message on investtalk.com and get you in touch with another tax professional, CPA, that might be able to kind of understand your situation a little bit better and give you a more definitive answer.
Okay, that sounds good.
Thanks, James. Now, who is really managing your mutual fund? That's one of our talking points today, our main talking point for today. But I also want to get to a few other things as well. Unfortunately, actor David Bowie passed away, or not actor, artist David Bowie passed away last night. And there's actually some history about David Bowie in the finance world that's pretty interesting that I kind of want to touch on, just kind of honor him because he was a pioneer in that sense as well. And then I also want to talk about localized housing markets. Is cheap oil going to hurt certain housing markets, and which ones will it help? So I'm going to talk about that. I also want to discuss the auto loan bubble. Is there a bubble in auto loans? I think there is, and it's something we should understand, especially in context to the Big Short that's out right now and the financial crisis that it discusses. There's a lot of parallels to the mortgage market back then and the auto loan market today. So we're going to touch on that. And then finally, if we have time, investing in high-yield corporate bond funds, what should you keep in mind when investing in these? Okay, so we're going to talk about all these things coming up over the next half hour or so of Invest Talk. Now, you're listening to Invest Talk. Coming up, we're going to touch on trading volume and why it's so important. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. We have less than a half hour left in the show, so we want you to get your call in sooner rather than later. You can call right now.
Coming up on the next Invest Talk, it's worrying income investors who chase riskier investments in a world where interest rates are just barely above zero. Does dividend investing still work in a rising rate environment? That's one of our talking points on the next Invest Talk. But of course, your questions come first. And thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Invest Talk is made possible each day by KPP Financial. This is Invest Talk for Monday, January 11th. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us right now. And Steve's next checkup date is coming up soon, January 13th in San Ramon. Or if you're out of reach of our California offices, you can hook up with Steve on Skype or by telephone. Click on Schedule a Meeting on investtalk.com.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the mutual funds or just ETFs that you might be investing in. You know, and there's a big and growing problem in the financial industry that is helping to cause traditional measures of the relationship between economic and market events to become detached from the historical norms. And what that is the increase financialization of investing, meaning models and using algorithms, similar to think of what happened in the financial crisis. There's all these algorithms that said that these instruments were not that risky, and in reality, they really, really were. And if you look at the way these systems are built in other areas of the economy, You'll see that the final decision is always made by a human, because I don't think, at least not yet, and I don't think it ever will, but computers don't have the ability to think dynamically, to take, because remember, they're just dealing with quantitative factors, whereas humans can understand quantitative and qualitative factors. When I say qualitative, I mean emotions, and think of like kind of the gut feeling type of thing. Understanding how people tend to react, whereas computers, they don't really have that emotional intelligence, right? So the run-up to the financial crisis, banks, investment banks, non-bank financial firms, even the Fed allowed the mortgage financial system to really degrade into something that just didn't make sense. And that breakdown of the global financial system caused a lot of havoc, as we all know, and a lot of harm. And that was all because they were reliant on simple quantitative only factors. And what you're seeing today is, you know, the rise of the robo-advisor and all these systems that say they know what to do or how to invest. simply based on numbers, just I don't think are going to cut it in the long run. They'll be good when times are good because it's easy. It's easy to invest. Even a computer can invest well in good times. But it takes a certain level of expertise, knowledge, understanding, discipline to handle a bear market. Handle rough times, poor times, okay? So understand that and try to take these systems that are being built with a grain of salt. You know, I think of these new robo-advisors kind of like the portfolio insurance of the 90s. And you remember how that ended? Asian financial crisis, 98. So just kind of take a step back, understand how they work, or they will work, likely work over time. Now, we're here live, 4 to 5 Pacific time, each and every weekday. And if you're listening at that time, you can call us live at 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. But if you're not with us then, you might be listening after hours, you can always call our 24-hour listener line. Here's one of those calls now.
This is Vic from San Jose, and my question is about Red Robin Gourmet Burger. It's a restaurant. The ticker is RRGB, I believe. I want to find out buy, sell, or hold.
All right, he's looking at Red Robin Gourmet Burger. They operate 514 casual restaurants in 43 states, a couple in Canada, and they're going to open 25 more. They opened 25 more last year. No dividend. Modest amount of debt, not too bad. P/E ratio is 19. Revenue was growing in the mid-teens, but last quarter it was only up 6%. So it was a marketable slowdown from what it was like a year ago. Earnings up 21% in 2015, going to be up 14% this year. But those are being downgraded. Those estimates are being downgraded by analysts. So that's not good. And the stock has fallen pretty, I don't say super hard, but definitely on the ropes. From 95 was the high in August. Then you have the big sell-off in the market late August, and it really hasn't recovered since. And now it's trading at $59.46 a share. And if you look at the weekly chart, you are near some support, so I'll give it that. But it is still a little expensive in my eyes, and I don't like the analysts to continue to downgrade it. And you know, it's not super cheap. So I think that this has more downside to go. If I was going to pick a level, to buy this, I'm going to go with $40. 40, 41, low 40s is that. That's where I'd probably try to pick it up. You know, maybe start picking up a little at 51, maybe then 45, and try to, you know, average yourself in around that low 40 level if you are going to buy Red Robin. It's a burger chain. You know, it's a good company. They're growing to some extent, fairly well run, pretty profitable. Return equity is 10%. It's always been in the mid to high single digits. So it's an okay company. I don't love it. And in an economy that is, or if the market continues to roll over, which I think it will over time, this will continue to go lower, because if the economy is not doing so hot, then people aren't going to go out to eat very much. And for example, back in 2010, they had a rough time and they only made 64 cents a share when the economy was kind of on the skids. And now they're back up to $3.21 a share this year. So it's a cyclical company, and that's why I'd be more weary of it right now. But keep it on your watch list. I'd say it's above average, but not great. Now, more and more retirement decisions have something to do with real estate, which is why KPB Financial has a licensed real estate agent on staff. That's me. I'm a licensed realtor, and we welcome your questions about real estate decisions in your life. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now with your questions, or you can go to investtalk.com and click on the Contact Justin button.
It helps to have perspective as you negotiate the ups and downs of the stock market, breaking the risk barrier, measuring and managing investment risk. That's just one of the recorded webinars that you can access anytime when you're an InvestTalk insider. Sign up for free right now on InvestTalk.com.
Let's go to Frank in Redwood City. How are you doing, Frank?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
Doing very well. What are you looking at?
Very good. I look at a company, symbol TARO, and I wanted to see, I just started to put it on my watch list and review it, but I wanted to get your insights on what you thought of that stock for investing a little bit longer term than short term.
Well, this is Taro Pharmaceuticals. They manufacture prescription and over-the-counter generic drugs for dermatological, cardiovascular, and neuropsychiatric conditions. So their return equity is huge, 40%. No dividend, no debt like that. Good cash flow. What happened last quarter? Last quarter earnings were down 7%. Revenues were down 15%. I'm wondering, is that a one-time thing that happened in June of 2014 as well, but they rebounded pretty well. So, but overall, I kind of like it. You know, I don't love the biotech industry generally right now, but for, you know, this is generic drugs, and generic drugs are kind of picking up, especially as the cost of branded drugs continue to skyrocket. So I like it. It is consolidating nicely. So that's a positive. Certainly there's some, on a technical basis, it ran up dramatically. You know, went from 20 all the way up to $170 a share. Now it's at 140, call it $48 a share. And it's been consolidating very bullishly. So I like it. It's, go for it.
Where do you see a spot where I may want to
pick it up?
Jump in at?
I would say one, you know, it's had a little pullback here. You know, this isn't a terrible spot. You know, 141, 142, somewhere in there would be another good spot to pick it up. But, you know, at that point, you're kind of splitting hairs. You know, there's always risk with what's happening with the biotech sector generally, so understand that. And then also, what happens if a Republican wins the White House later this year and repeals Obamacare, and that's going to hurt the pharmaceutical and health industry generally. So there's a lot of risk in that sense, but it's a company that's doing very well. I'd want to do a little bit of understanding of how they got from making only 81 cents a share in 2009 to making $11.92 in 2016 estimates. That's a that's huge growth. Is that just because they're raising the price of drugs? Are they playing the game that's that a lot of drug companies are doing now, which is buying up these drugs that haven't been registered with the FDA, and they register with the FDA. The FDA says they're safe, and everyone knows they're safe, but that gives them a patent on them for a short period of time. That's the game that these pharmaceutical companies are playing, and that worries me that if this company is doing the same thing, that model is going to change, because it's really killing the industry, and that has to change. So I'm a little bit worried on that front. I would look and do my research of how did it do that? How did it grow so dramatically? Is it playing this game? Or are they really just that good at operating their business? I need to know.
And if I got in, say, at the 140, low 140s, where would you see a top? Or maybe I should think about getting out.
You mean where could it run to on the upside?
Yeah, I really think I should, you know, pull myself out and not get over carried away.
Well, you know, that's always difficult because, you know, where the earnings will be 6 months, a year from now is hard to know. There'll obviously be a lot of resistance back up at the top of about $170 a share. So that would be certainly a lot of resistance. If it can get past that, you know, that's into all-time highs, and then there's really no resistance. So it's really hard to say where to get out. That's just, I would have a trailing stop is what I would do. I'd have an 8-10% trailing stop on it.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
Thanks for the call, Frank. Now it's time for Invest Talk 101. Why trading volume is so important. Now, trading volume is a measurement of the activity of the market. How much business is being, transactions are being done. What kind of volume there is out there. Buying and selling. The amount of buying and selling. Most traders keep a close eye on this. I know I do. And when volume is low, usually it's pretty easy to move the market. The market kind of floats up. If it's a low volume name, scammers can come in and manipulate the price and exert their outsized influence on it. And some investors place higher than average importance on trading volume. And they're big on, those people are big on technical analysis. That's what I study, what we study on a regular basis. But volume can tell you that something's happening or about to happen that could move a stock up or down dramatically. Like whether the stock is on the verge of a breakout or into a downtrend. Okay? And one thing I always look for is our high volume reversal weeks or months or days sometimes. So, and the reason that is because if you have a stock going up dramatically, strongly over an extended period of time, multiple years, and then that stock reverses on high volume, that probably means that the big investors are getting out, or the stock is tired and it wants to go lower. It wants to start reverting to its mean. And the same thing happens on the downside. Think of a commodity sector right now. It's on the ropes. It should turn relatively soon. When will that be? It's hard to know. But there will be a big volume reversal in a particular in the commodity space. And that will tell you that's when you really need to be getting in more aggressively. Okay, so keep an eye on volume. It's very, very important to understand where price will move in the future. Now that's Invest Talk 101, and is there a topic that you want to know more about? Get in touch with us. We're right here now at 888-99-CHART, or you can write me a note on investtalk.com. Just click on the Contact Justin button. Now, what level of risk is appropriate for you? The answer is, it depends. But if you answer a series of simple questions, you may find out the answer. So why not take our risk analysis test free? It only takes 3-4 minutes to fill out. It's the beginning of a learning experience that will pay off in so many ways, get you to understand what type of investor you are. So many people think they're aggressive, but they're really conservative, and vice versa. So take it now for free on investtalk.com. Just look for free risk analysis in a blue box. Let's go to Oscar in San Jose. How are you doing, Oscar?
Hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. Thanks, man.
I just want to get your opinion on the real estate market in general. If you could be specific in the Bay Area. I'm looking to buy, but it's a little bit overpriced, but it still has room for growth. So I just wanted to ask you what you look for in a market.
Well, every market is localized, so every market has its positives, its negatives. There's two things that really affect prices. Incomes, interest rates, and along with interest rates, you can talk about the willingness for banks to lend, right? And the interest rates seem to want to go up, but they're not really rising. So that's been, kept real estate kind of afloat. The economy is still doing okay. In the Silicon Valley market, Bay Area market, you're obviously getting a lot of inflation because of the tech space. Technology. I think there is a tech bubble 2.0, and that is one of the reasons why I say the main reason why real estate prices there are so strong and are so high. So, and I do think that bubble is starting to crack. How long it's really going to take and how low it will go is hard to say, but I think it will eventually feed into real estate prices. It's usually a lagged effect. So don't think that it's going to happen immediately. It's going to take some time. So I would say be patient. There's always opportunities. There are always opportunities in a marketplace, but it just depends on how aggressive you want to be. And you know, in this environment, in that area, I would say be patient. Look for opportunities. If you want to call me, you know, after the show, or you know, send me a message on investtalk.com. I can call you up and kind of talk about a little more specifics on what your goals are, what your needs are, what your price range is, and you know, we can kind of go through that. But I would say be patient and look for opportunities.
Okay, thank you very much.
No problem, Oscar. Thanks for calling. Now let's talk quickly about what do I want to talk about. I don't know, since David Bowie passed away last night, it was pretty shocking. Only 69 years old, but I think it was pretty interesting. His history in the financial markets. He did make history in 1997. He teamed up with banker David Pullman, and he created some bonds that were backed by the royalties of his albums. 25 of his albums released from 1969 to 1990. These bonds were bought by Prudential for $55 million and a 7.9% coupon rate and amortized over a 10-year period. Now, because these were considered a loan the way it was structured, Bowie got all this money without a tax liability, without paying taxes. This is income without paying taxes. Now, there was a monster that actually threatened the industry. And that was internet privacy. Remember Pandora or Napster back in the day? And that caused his bonds to be downgraded to junk in 2004, but they were eventually paid off in 2007. So he was really, and he was the first one to do that. And there have been other bands that have done this. They haven't raised nearly as much money, but there's artists like Rod Stewart, Iron Maiden, James Brown, the Isley Brothers, they issued bonds similar to this, but they weren't able to match the size. I mean, $55 million, that's a lot. And there's actually, it's happening now again with the sports industry. Fantex Holdings created securities that securitized the future stream of revenues that comes from certain athletes. So you can give athletes basically money up front and say, I want a certain percentage of your revenue stream going forward, and that's basically what Fantex is. So David Bowie's really the pioneer of this, starting back in the late 90s. And to this day, bonds issued by artists are a lot of times referred to as Bowie bonds, in honor of the man who changed music and finance. Now our hour is up. I hope you think it was a good investment. If you have a question or comment that you want to share directly, you can get a note to me on investtalk.com. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KP Financial, we thank you for listening, and let's get back together on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.